You're listening to Adopter Stories from the Adoption and Fostering Podcast. In this episode, Stephanie shares her story of adopting two little boys with her husband, Gregory.
Why did we adopt? Well, my husband and I, we're quite passionate about social justice, but we also really wanted to be parents. And when it appeared that we just weren't getting pregnant and there was absolutely no reason anyone could find why that should be, we had a bit of soul searching about the IVF route. And we just felt that spending a load of public money and probably eventually our own money on IVF when there were so many children out there who were in desperate need of a home, it just didn't feel right to us. We also had quite a lot of sort of ethical dilemmas around the IVF process and what would happen to any embryos that we didn't end up using and all of that sort of thing. And the more we thought through it, the more we felt that that route wasn't for us. And so we started to explore adoption. But we started to contact local authorities just to make inquiries and find out a bit about what the process would involve. And that bit was fairly negative for us because my husband and I are quite mixed race, and you can see me now and I'm fair and blonde and white UK, but my husband is very mixed race, but we didn't fit into any of the nice social worker boxes. So they would say stuff to us like, oh, well, we only have white or African Caribbean children, so we wouldn't have any children who would be suitable for you, which we just found completely mystifying because, you know, we were perfectly happy to adopt children of any race. And I think at that point, the sort of narrative around race was very much that you should the children should go to a home where the parents represent their own heritage. That's changed a bit now, but when we were going through the process, that was the thinking. So the local authorities, really, we just couldn't find anyone who was interested in us. When we then decided to try local authorities who would have a lot of Asian children, so we picked areas where there were loads of Asian children because my husband's part Asian, and that started to sound a bit more promising. But then they started asking about issues around faith, and we're both Christian, and they were saying, well, that wouldn't work because these children are all Hindu. It felt like everything was in a box. You know, they're either all Hindu children, so they wouldn't possibly be suitable for you, or they're all black children, so they wouldn't be suitable for you, or they're all something else and they wouldn't be suitable for you. And it was getting very frustrating. So we ended up looking at a lot of the private agencies, and eventually we ended up going with the Catholic Children's Society, who of course don't do adoptions anymore because of the issues around gay adoption. For us, they were the first people that we spoke to who sort of didn't discriminate against us, oddly, because they didn't see any issue at all with us being mixed race and thought it would be perfectly possible for us to find suitable children. Yeah, that was quite interesting. That's how we came to adopt. So for us, it was a really convoluted process, actually, because we finally hit upon the Catholic Children's Society, and that all seemed to be going well. And then Gregory's job moved. For a while, he was trying to commute really long distance to this new job. But eventually we decided this was ridiculous and we were going to have to move house. And because we were going to have to move house, we were going to have to move agencies. So the Catholic Children's Society had two branches, but basically they operated completely separately. So we were almost sort of starting again. We hadn't started going through the home study process at that point, but we were almost starting again. And so we sort of moved house, got settled in, and then picked it up again. So obviously numerous months had passed by that time. Because the Catholic Children's Society at that point was sort of in wind down, they had some staffing difficulties, and our first social worker actually left halfway through our home study, and they decided that we would need to start the process all over again with the new social worker because it would be too difficult to just pick it all up from the notes. So that then set us back numerous months again, and we had to start off with a new social worker and start the process afresh. So in terms of the time frame, we were nowhere within the sort of standard time frames that they were stating. In terms of the actual process, I think we were quite wise as to what was going to happen, and we knew it was going to be a pretty invasive process. I think we were very well prepared for that. That wasn't a surprise at all. There were a couple of sort of oddities about it, in that they seemed obsessed with the fact that I hadn't had enough trauma and difficulties in my own life. And they kept coming back to that over and over and over again every time we met. And it was just, I kept going home and saying to Gregory, what is all this about? Why do they keep going on at me about this? They just don't seem to want to accept my answers. And Gregory was getting more and more frustrated with them for doing it, because they weren't really asking him anything at all. And eventually he just said, look, what's going on here? Why do you keep asking these same questions? We've got nothing further to add. You're telling us that if you're going to adopt, you need to deal with your own rubbish first. Well, she's telling you she hasn't got any. So you should be pleased. And then eventually it stopped. I mean, that was the only bit of it that was really quite a mystery, because I had quite a happy child. We went through the process and eventually got to the end and went through panel and passed first time. And then, of course, when we went to the bit where you have to start putting your profile out there and looking for children, the old chestnuts of race and faith came up again. And we were expressing an interest in the children that we saw who we thought would fit with our family. And we were getting things like, oh, well, I don't think the social workers would consider the two of you for a blonde child. And I would sort of go home and look in the mirror and go, that's a bit confusing, because I would see myself as fair and blonde, and why would I not have a blonde child? I mean, you know, obviously my husband's dark, so probably if we'd have birth children, they probably wouldn't have been blonde, but it just seemed absolutely ridiculous. And so we had a lot of trouble with that sort of thing. And eventually our social worker actually spotted our boys. She got a flyer through, and as soon as she got the flyer through, one of the boys really does look like my husband, because it's very, very odd, the strangest possible thing. And I think she spotted that and thought, my goodness, these boys look like Gregory. So she got some more details and then phoned us up and said, oh, I've found these two boys. And we had been kind of hoping for a boy and a girl, but by that point that kind of thing had become far less relevant, because we'd been through so many ups and downs with the process. So yeah, we thought, oh, these boys, they look really cute. I had to try and find out a little bit more about their background, and it just seemed that they were very lively boys and we're very fit. You know, we like getting out there and running around. We probably wouldn't fit so well with children who just wanted to sit around and not do much. So that sounded like it would work for us. And I know that the social workers had said that they'd struggled to find anyone locally who was sort of fit enough. This should have started to ring some alarm bells, who were fit enough to cope with them. But we just thought, oh, that's great, we'll be able to do lots of running around and playing sports, woohoo, that'd be really, really good. Of course, what they were actually saying is these children are a pair of hurricanes and it's going to be absolutely exhausting. But at that point we didn't quite pick up on that. One of the things that I'm really quite passionate about in terms of the adoption process is that people should have as much information as possible. And I do think information is not necessarily withheld, but sometimes just because of the inadequacies of the system, it just doesn't exist. So it can't be handed over. And for us, when you go through and you tick your boxes, what are the things you would accept? What would you not accept? And we were really clear that under no circumstances would we accept a child with fetal alcohol syndrome. And that was because we were very much in this because we like the idea of sort of bringing about restoration in a child's life. And we felt that with something like fetal alcohol syndrome, it's so much harder to do that because we were aware that the brain damage was permanent and there was a lot of problems that were much more intractable. And that wasn't so much what we wanted to be working with. And so we were really clear with our social workers that that was a no. But the reality actually is that the majority of the children who are up for adoption have been exposed to drugs and alcohol in utero, probably, or certainly a huge proportion. And, you know, obviously the birth parents will say no, the birth mum will say no, but that doesn't mean that that's the truth. So our social worker was amazing, actually. She went and spent a whole day trawling through all of the files and trying to find as much information as she could. And she did find a bit of information which indicated that there may have been exposure to drugs and alcohol in utero, which she challenged on our behalf and asked for more information. But I think, and I've heard a lot of other adopters say this, you get the pushback, oh, it's not our policy to investigate these things further and we can't really find out anymore because the birth mother's denied it. And so these things don't get investigated or explored, and you're quite invested in the child or the children by that point. And also we started to realise that, well, this is probably going to be the case for most children. And whilst it was just obvious from looking at them that they didn't have fetal alcohol syndrome, they had none of the facial features, we knew that they may well have FASD, but we were just going to have to take a punt on how significant that was going to be because they were quite young at the time. They were 5 and 3. So that was something that was an unknown that we were just going to have to leap into, really. I think what's been really interesting for us is that our children most definitely do have FASD. It hasn't been diagnosed officially, but I would eat my hat if they don't, just because of all the symptoms we see and how all of the therapeutic interventions that we've been through didn't necessarily yield the benefits that the therapists would have expected. And everyone was scratching their heads and thinking, well, why are these therapeutic interventions not producing results, when actually no one had investigated whether there was anything else going on? That's something else that, you know, my husband and I really do find quite difficult, because when we went through the preparation process, it was all about attachment. And obviously attachment, it's really important. But there was very little about other conditions that your child might have that could bring complexity. So there was very little about fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. There is very little about ADHD, OCD, those sorts of things, or even trauma. Obviously, that was covered. But the focus was really on attachment. And so when people start trying to tackle difficulties, they go for attachment first, which I always find really strange, because surely if you have a full psychiatric assessment and see if there's anything else going on, there are things there that you could treat. And once you've treated those things, it's much easier to see what's left in terms of the impact of trauma and attachment. You know, it was after the first year or so, when the little ones started primary school, we started to realise, I don't think all of this is going to sort of get better within 2 or 3 years with just therapeutic parenting. Because we were doing all the things in all of the books and things were just not getting any better. And we kept going and thinking, well, maybe another year, or we'll keep doing it for another year and then things will get better. And then you start to think, I think there's something else going on here. And the little one was starting to get into trouble at school, and school were dreadful. They didn't communicate with us at all until it got quite catastrophic. So I think the first we knew of him having any problems at school is when they wrote a letter to us and said that he had ripped up another child's work, and if he did anything like that again, he'd be excluded. It's basically what the letter said. So he was four. Just to come straight in with that kind of a letter was just awful. And they weren't offering any kind of interventions. We said, well, doesn't he need to have a statement? And they said, oh, no, he's not bad enough for a statement. So he said, well, you're planning to exclude a four-year-old potentially, but he's not bad enough for a statement. That doesn't really make any sense to us. And we just got loads of patronising rubbish about, you know, did you understand how difficult it would be to be parents? And, you know, the Senko said to us, you might like to think about trying boundaries, rewards and sanctions. It was just absolutely ridiculous. So I said to look, do we really look like the kind of people who wouldn't have thought of those things already and wouldn't already be using those kind of strategies or have tried those kind of strategies? I said, do you want to come to my study and see my entire library of parenting books? Perhaps you'd like to borrow some. And she was like, oh, okay, well, I don't know. So I think they were just sort of mystified, really, and so unprepared for coping with what our children were bringing. In the end, we were not getting anywhere with the placing authority. They didn't really want to do anything to help. They were trying to avoid doing anything to help. And so we just decided to pay for therapy ourselves. And so we just went to our savings and hired a family therapist and started doing TheraPlay. And eventually when it got to the 3 years, we thought, well, let's have a go now and see if our local authority where we live is a little bit more understanding and whether they might fund some kind of support. They were so much better than the placing authority. So it just goes to show how the local authorities differ enormously in what they offer. And they came along and did an assessment of need. And I think we just felt for the first time we'd been heard and we'd been understood in terms of what it was that we were going through with our children. They suggested that we try some life story therapy. Our boys had what the placing authority called life story books, but they were basically just photo albums of birth family members smiling and giving birthday presents. It just gave such a completely inappropriate impression to the children, and it was very confusing for them. So we thought, yes, that sounds like a really good idea, life story therapy, we'll do that. So we started with the younger one first, and at that point he just flipped out completely and became quite suicidal, depressed. The behaviours just escalated. He was so fearful. I think it came out in the therapy that he perhaps thought that we had stolen him from the foster carers because he'd been so poorly prepared for the adoption process. And so he was now terrified that somebody was going to come along and steal him from us. And so he wouldn't go to sleep at night. And he would need me to be lying next to him holding his hand. And so we went back and explained that we didn't think this life story therapy was helping. And they said, oh, we need to stop this and you need a psychiatric assessment for him because it's quite obvious there's a lot of complexity here. So again, we put our money in our pocket and went and got a private psychiatric assessment because that was the only way to get it done. And I just tell people over and over again that that was the best money we spent because it might seem expensive, but it's a one-off thing. It's a one-off assessment. If you can get everybody to give your birthday money, instead of spending it on a present that you're not really going to have time or the capacity to enjoy, you might as well spend it on getting a psychiatric assessment for your child. Because for us, it was just a complete eye-opener. And the youngest one was diagnosed with ADHD and started on medication, which I was initially quite anti. But in all honesty, it completely revolutionised our lives, because once he was on the medication, we were then able to do the therapeutic parenting. Prior to that, the therapeutic parenting had almost been going into a brick wall. You know, it's not all sorted out by any means. He still has all sorts of ongoing problems. But I think that once we'd gone through that step and we could start to see what was there, you could start to understand the trauma better and start to work with it in a therapeutic way, because it wasn't getting all muddled up with the stuff that was just ADHD. When our children were placed, the placing authority was in special measures. But I still think what I would do differently, despite that, is I would try to be much firmer about really trying to force through more assessment and more guaranteed support before the children were placed. It's very difficult, because they'll always make it as difficult as possible for that to actually happen. But I think had we done that, we would have had more support earlier on, and we might not at that point have had the insight to realise that what we really needed was assessment. But with the benefit of hindsight, I would have had the psychiatric assessment right up front. Maybe not in the first year, because I think you've got to allow some things to sort of settle down. But after that, I think it would have been quite possible to diagnose the ADHD when he was five. For me, one of the things that I really enjoy is helping other adopters, and I like to, engage with people on the forums, and that sort of sense of camaraderie and being in it together and all supporting each other as part of the adoption community. That's been really, really good. As part of my work, I also support a lot of adopters, foster carers and special guardians when their children have eating difficulties. I'm a dietitian, and I've been running webinar programs for people whose children have issues around eating, fatty eating, which could be associated with trauma or sensory difficulties, that sort of thing. So that's been really rewarding. And I think with our oldest son, who's now 14, you can start to see little signs of that lovely, sensitive young man that he's becoming. Because, I mean, he still has a lot of stuff to deal with. I think because when you've been through what these children go through, sometimes when you come out the other end, you can be a very emotionally intelligent person. And you can see that with his mates, that they really value his emotional intelligence. They call him Jeremy Kyle because he basically gets on FaceTime and sorts out all their problems. He said, "I think I might be a family therapist." I was like, "Oh my word, really? Okay." I think we are very clear that our lives would be poorer for not being parents. When we think, what would our lives have been like if we hadn't been parents? It would have been easy. We'd have had a lot more money. We'd have been able to go on a lot of lovely holidays. We'd have been able to fly on with our careers, which, you know, could have been very rewarding. But at the end of the day, that's what we would have had. We wouldn't have had that experience of being a family, which is very, very important to us. So however hard it's been, we still very much value the fact that we've had the opportunity to be a family, definitely.